because that's part of the problem. We have a template, and the coverage of this shooting will last probably for the next week. And then we jump to the next one. So this is our sad reality. And we need to change the reality as a big picture. This is not about video games. This is not about mental health. That happens all around the planet. This is about guns and easy access to guns. Whoever defers that is wrong and is not understanding where the problem is.
And Manuel Oliver, we have only about 30 seconds, but I'm wondering, in terms of, were you able to affect, if not at the national level, at the state level in Florida after the Parkland shooting, some changes in gun policy?
We got changes in the opposite way. Now we have Ron DeSantis as the governor, who is planning to leave us before getting out of the office an open carry law. So God bless us, unless we get rid of this guy, which I'm planning to do.
Well, Manuel Oliver, our love to Patricia, your wife. Manny is co-founder of the gun reform group Change the Ref, father of Joaquim, one of the 17 people killed in the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Of course, we'll continue to follow the story, what's happening in Congress, what's happening in Texas, and what's happening around the world. Families have begun sharing the names of the victims, and we'll end with their names again as we started. Xavier Lopez, 10. Jose Flores, 10. Uzziah Garcia, 9. Amory Jo Garza, 10. Annabelle Guadalupe Rodriguez, 10. And 2 fourth grade teachers. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Berg.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland.
Expect us to be grateful, but we're not that dumb. You feed on the poor and you leave them for dead, and we know that your hunger can never be fed. How fine are your mansions and your golf courses too? How rich are your relatives? You've got quite a few. Your money uncountable, investments unknown. You're a mystery until your cover gets blown. I know who you love and who you despise. You love yourself first with a narcissist's eyes, and you despise anybody who calls out your game. Well, I'm calling you now, so take your best aim. You were born into money, so how would you know? You're just here to be used for your revenue flow, like a fistful of numbers, like something to earn. Yeah, but some of those numbers are starting to turn. Like a baby in swaddling, you suck on your thumb. But your thumb is a cell phone, that's how it gets done. With your midnight explosion, your rants and your bile, is it any wonder we become so reviled? Go out into the world and see who we are. A laughing stock nation under a dangerous star, armed and unstable with a tyrant's design. It's come to this, yes, it's the end of the line. And I hope that you fall, and you fall so hard, but you cannot be saved from your dead house card, with your memory buried, so no one will know how this once great nation could fall so low. We will go on. Yes, we will survive.
Okay, there we go. All right, good morning, everybody. A little bit of a technical snafu here in the KBOO studios. I am Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Good morning, everybody. And yes, that was Jim Page, Seattle's Jim Page. Just felt like hearing a little Jim this morning. He's actually got a new album out. I haven't got a chance to listen to it. But that was from a release a few years back called A Handful of Songs. And maybe we'll get to see him live again at some point. He does come through Portland quite a bit, being based in Seattle. All right, that was Master of Lies. Yes, there are a lot of them, and they'll be going into high gear once again with the latest school shooting. Can you believe Amy Goodman has to say it's the worst school shooting in an elementary school since Sandy Hook, of course. I mean, come on. All right. We can talk about that if you want. I've got some things I want to talk about. I want to read a little bit from a piece by Chris Hedges. I'm here by myself, so I invite your calls in a few minutes at 503-231-8187. We are, of course, in our last week of our spring membership drive. We're heading towards our goal of $56,000. And you can help us get there. If you haven't yet given during this drive, or this year, or whatever time frame you tend to give to the station, we would like you to step up right now and go to kboo.fm and click on that old donate button. This is a listener-sponsored radio station. That means that the listeners yourselves are the ones who keep us going. We do get a little bit of money from other sources, but I think it's like something like 80% or more that comes from our listeners, our listener members, I should say. We are a membership-based organization. You can, of course, donate and not become a member should you so wish, but yeah, we've been going for 53 years now. We follow in the footsteps of the flagship Pacifica radio station KPFA, which started this all off a few decades before that, right after the war. A bunch of pacifists decided that what was going out on the commercial jingoistic airwaves was not to their liking, and they wanted to just try something different, and they did, and it worked, and it's been working for Pacifica. They've got five stations now. We're an affiliate of Pacifica. We're not a Pacifica station, but we play some Pacifica programming, and for that we do have to pay, among some other things, and we have to pay for the electricity. We have to pay for the upkeep of the equipment. We have to pay for the management of the station, and all these things do take money, and so. This is one of the times of year that we come to you directly over the air and ask you for your support. And a relatively small portion of our listeners actually are able to or do step up and become members and contribute financially to the station. We're just asking maybe for a few more of you to do that right now. You can text KBOO to 44321 on your mobile device. You can mail your contribution in to KBOO Radio at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. We do have another match of up to $7,000 just to increase your incentive, knowing that whatever amount you contribute through the end of the drive, which is on May 28th in 3 days. Whatever amount you contribute in the next few days, hopefully right now, hopefully today, it will be doubled by a group of anonymous donors. So that's another reason, if you even needed another reason, in addition to all the great music and cultural programming and the live public affairs shows, including this one right now. We do have Talk Radio 8 to 9 every weekday morning. And I hold down the Wednesday slot like I have for a number of years now. And it's a, you know, it's a responsibility. It's one I take seriously. All our programmers who do take seriously their duties and responsibilities as programmers to get you whatever it is, the best music, the best information, the best news, best reviews of art and music, all the good stuff we bring you here on KBOO on a daily basis. We are asking you now to support this programming by going to kboo.fm. That is our website. If you're not that familiar with it, you can do so right now. There's a donate button right there on the homepage, kboo.fm, or you can text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail it in, as I said, to the address where I am sitting right now, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Once again, we do have a new match of up to $7,000. Your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar if you contribute through the end of the spring membership drive, which is coming up in 3 days, May 28th at midnight. All right, well, I did say I wanted to read a little bit of a new Chris Hedges piece. Before we take callers, no way out but war. Permanent war has cannibalized the country. It has created a social, political, and economic morass. Each new military debacle is another nail in the coffin of Pax Americana. And of course, it is clear that the mass shootings are linked to America as a violent, war-based economic country. The United States, as the near unanimous vote to provide nearly $40 billion in aid to Ukraine illustrates, is trapped in the death spiral of unchecked militarism. No high-speed trains, no universal health care, no viable COVID relief program, no respite from 8.3% inflation, no infrastructure programs to repair decaying roads and bridges, which require $41.8 billion to fix the 43,586 structurally deficient bridges, on average 68 years old. No forgiveness of $1.7 trillion in student debt, no addressing income inequality, no program to feed the 17 million children who go to bed each night hungry, no rational gun control or curbing of the epidemic of nihilistic violence and mass shootings, no help for the 100,000 Americans who die each year of drug overdoses, no minimum wage of $15 an hour to counter 44 years of wage stagnation, no respite from gas prices that are projected to hit $6 a gallon. The permanent war economy implanted since the end of World War II has destroyed the private economy, bankrupted the nation, and squandered trillions of dollars of taxpayer money. The monopolization of capital by the military has driven the U.S. debt to $30 trillion, $6 trillion more than the U.S. gross domestic product of $24 trillion. Servicing this debt costs $300 billion a year. We spent more on the military, $813 billion, for fiscal year 2023 than the next nine countries, including China and Russia, combined. We are paying a heavy social, political, and economic cost for our militarism. Washington watches passively as the U.S. rots morally, politically, economically, and physically, while China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, India, and other countries extract themselves from the tyranny of the U.S. dollar and the International Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunication, or SWIFT, a messaging network banks and other financial institutions use to send and receive information, such as money transfer instructions. Once the U.S. dollar is no longer the world's reserve currency, once there is an alternative to SWIFT, it will precipitate an internal economic collapse. It will force the immediate contraction of the U.S. empire, shuttering most of its nearly 800 overseas military installations. It will signal the death of Pax Americana. Democrat or Republican, it does not matter. War is the raison d'etat of the state. Extravagant military expenditures are justified in the name of national security. The nearly $40 billion allocated for Ukraine, most of it going into the hands of weapons manufacturers such as Raytheon Technologies, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, BAE Systems, Lockheed Martin, and Boeing, is only the beginning. Military strategists who say the war will be long and protracted are talking about infusions of $4 or $5 billion in military aid a month to Ukraine. We face existential threats, but these do not count. The proposed budget for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, in the fiscal year 2023 is $10.675 billion. The proposed budget for the Environmental Protection Agency is $11.8 billion. Ukraine alone gets more than double that amount. Pandemics and the climate emergency are afterthoughts. War is all that matters. This is a recipe for collective suicide. There were three restraints to the avarice and bloodlust of the permanent war economy that no longer exist. The first was the old liberal wing of the Democratic Party, led by politicians such as Senator George McGovern, Senator Eugene McCarthy, and Senator William Fulbright, who wrote The Pentagon Propaganda Machine. The self-identified progressives, a pitiful minority in Congress today, from Barbara Lee, who was a single vote in the House and the Senate opposing a broad, open-ended authorization allowing the president to wage war in Afghanistan or anywhere else, to Ilhan Omar, now dutifully line up to fund the latest proxy war. The second restraint was an independent media and academia, including journalists such as I.F. Stone and Neil Sheehan, along with scholars such as Seymour Melman, author of The Permanent War Economy, and Pentagon Capitalism, the Political Economy of War. Third, and perhaps most important, was an organized anti-war movement led by religious leaders such as Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King Jr., and Phil and Dan Berrigan, as well as groups such as Students for Democratic Society. They understood that unchecked militarism was a fatal disease. None of these opposition forces, which did not reverse the permanent war economy but curbed its excesses, now exist. And he goes on at some length, actually, so I cannot read this entire article, but you can find it at Sheerpost, that's SCHEERPOST.com. It came out just a couple days ago. It's Chris Hedges' No Way Out But War. And, of course, I have had him on, and I had Ray McGovern on, to criticize the background to the Ukraine war. You know, the assumption now is that it was basically inevitable. No, that Hedges and McGovern and I argue that actually there were avenues to diplomacy. We might have had to give in a little bit in order to make that happen on the question of NATO, Ukraine and NATO, on other questions. But at this point, with climate change barreling down the gun towards us, with biological meltdown on the planet, with all the other intersecting crises that inflict us, we do not have time to continue the lies and games that are going on, that are allowing the military to continue to dominate, because the military is the biggest contributor to climate change on the planet. And we have to do, you know, well, basically, I don't know, even look at Biden's latest statement on China, where he, you know, he seemingly went back on the decades-old strategic ambiguity or something like that, where, you know, we sort of pretend that we believe that China has sovereignty over Taiwan. We don't call it into question publicly, so as not to risk conflagrations on that front. And instead, he said that, you know, that if Taiwan was attacked, we would defend them. Now, that seems on the face of it, just like, you know, giving military aid to Ukraine, on the face of it, it seems like, oh, that's a, you know, it's a just thing to do. That China attacking Taiwan would be unjust, that Russia attacking Ukraine is unjust. But there's much more to it than that. There's the whole background of U.S. expansionism and militarism that created the situation to begin with. I mean, the Soviet Union, with Putin is a product of, was a reaction to the global capitalist system. Let's just face it. Maybe it certainly wasn't the best. It certainly didn't resolve the capitalist crisis. Certainly didn't bring down global capitalism. It, in fact, it created yet another monster of a state system. And just like China has become another yet another monster, but the expansionist imperial based nation states, England, France, Germany, and the United States, which was spawned from England but just became another one, they're the original context, the imperial colonial expansionism and militarism. And the capitalist economy that developed out of them is the original context. And that is the primary contradiction that still needs to be resolved, unfortunately. And so, I wouldn't want to live in China. I wouldn't want to live in Putin's Russia. I think they're abhorrent. But we need to look at the mote in our own eye first here in the United States. So what might potentially, I don't know, what might potentially reduce, change that global dynamic of this continued militarist competition? Well, the 800 military bases, so, you know, maybe China would be open to some form of negotiation where, you know, we pledge to reduce our military bases, specifically in the Pacific, that, you know, they might feel threatened by, if, you know, they would stop building these islands in the South China Sea, stop building new military bases, stop, you know, et cetera. You know, why don't we, have you heard any leader propose such a thing? No. Have we heard it come from the grassroots? Not much. You know, there is, as Chris Hedges said, there really isn't much of an anti-war movement going on anymore. If anything is going to change, it's going to have to be a combination of anti-racist, anti-imperialist, environmental, feminist, etc. It has to be truly intersectional, but we have to include this deep critique of the roots of the United States militarist system. I don't know if you heard, I think it was yesterday, we're on Democracy Now!, they're talking about Haiti. I mean, that's brilliant, this New York Times report, which I haven't seen, which apparently has gotten some new documents that have come to light, which shed light on the way that Haiti was set up to be indebted, be impoverished, be, you know, as they call it, the most poorest country in the Western Hemisphere by this absurd, obscene demand by France for them to pay back these inflated reparations because they seized their property, both the land that they had illegally seized by colonialism and the people that they had illegally seized as slaves and continue to enslave. And then the United States actually had control of Haiti for several decades in the early part of the 20th century. The Citibank, I guess it was the Citibank of New York first, they had heavily invested in Haiti, in that whole system. And so this all came up with Occupy. A lot of the information about how the whole banking system, you know, the Bank of England itself gained its wealth with the slave trading systems, specifically the financing the slave ships, and then so investing them, and then they had to, you know, recoup their money by continuing the whole slave trade and continuing the whole colonial system that the slave trade built and created vast obscene profits for the British Empire and, of course, in the United States as well. And this whole, you know, this the whole banking system, I'm kind of leaning to another subject I want to dip into, which is the private equity firms, and a explosive new article in Mother Jones, the June issue just came out just on the newsstands, called The Smash and Grab Economy. And so basically I think that, as Hedges was talking about, the military basically dominating the economy since World War II, I actually think that the dominance of the military of the economy is partially what led to the financialization of the economy, which is what the private equity firms represent, because that kind of squeezed, they had such control of the economy that everybody had to develop all these very manipulative devices to continue to wrest profit from the system. And one of them is these private equity firms, which engage in leverage buyouts. They buy up they're buying up rental properties. There's an article about some tenants in Brooklyn that are fighting against the huge rental increases and actually being evicted from their apartments because so many buildings are being bought up by these huge private equity firms. And a lot of them are buying up oil fields, are buying up fossil fuel infrastructure. And anyway, this is a curated, it's two articles written by Hanna Leventova, and like three or four other articles on all sorts of different, you know, the hospital, healthcare industry, hospitals, various companies involved in healthcare, et cetera, et cetera. It's just if you haven't educated yourself on the nature of the financialized capitalist system, you really should do it. If you really want to understand the dynamics driving what's going on in the world, that's where you'll find it. So I can read a little bit from that. We're already almost halfway through the show, so I would like to open up the phone lines for your phone calls, should you be so interested to do it. 503-231-8187. We're trying to talk about the truth of what's going on in the world here today, starting out with Chris Hedges' No Way Out But War. Really well worth reading the whole article. I was only able to get through four or five paragraphs. It would probably take up the rest of the show just finishing this article. Yeah. Love to hear what you have to say. Again, we are in our spring membership drive. We are roaring to a conclusion. We're still $10,000-$15,000 short of our $56,000 goal. And we need to make that up by May 28th. We really do. We're coming out of the pandemic. We've had some staffing shortages. We're trying to fill some positions. We really want to come back strong coming out of this pandemic. That's assuming the monkeypox doesn't get us, but I won't go into that right now. We do have to pay attention because, you know, with climate change, things are changing quick, and the pandemics are one, global pandemics, regional epidemics are one result because of, you know, both because of climate change and because of just the continued expansion of the human-built environment and coming into contact with animals. And of course, animals are moving because of climate change. And humans are being forced to move too because of climate change. It's mass migrations of all kinds going on. It's a crazy mixed up world. And we really need to get out of the war economy and devote vast amounts of money to getting off of fossil fuels, developing a whole new infrastructure while we still have the window of time to do it. Things might start spiraling so far out of control, we're not even going to be able to make the changes we need. Sorry to be so dire here this morning, folks, but we really need to get with what's really going on in the world today. Okay. And KBOO is one place where you can do it, where you can get some of that. You know, Democracy Now! Gives you some of it. I hopefully give you some of it. Our other talk shows do. Alternative radio Tuesday mornings. Barbara Bernstein's great program, Locus Focus. Dennis Bernstein's program. There's just so much here on KBOO. So much. The nightly news. The just amazing variety of music and other programs. This is really a prize here in Portland, Oregon, that needs and deserves your support. So go to kboo.fm at your earliest opportunity and click on donate. kboo.fm, that's our website. Or you can text KBOO to 44321. As I said at the outset, we do have a new matching donation of $7,000, which means that from now through May 28, all donations up to the up to $7,000 will get a match, a dollar for dollar match, which means if you send us $100, then you're actually donating $200. Send us $50, you're donating $100. You get the picture. But please do it, and do it now or do it soon. This is going to be your final opportunity for this program anyway during the membership drive. So if you want to support Wednesday Talk Radio, it is, you know, it is taken note of. If you're able to go to kbo.fm during this program, make a donation. You know, hey, maybe you can even make a statement that you support this program and the talk shows here on KBOO. Please do that now. It's a last chance to help us reach our goal of $56,000. You know, there's reasons why these we have these goals. We have specific budgets made for the year. You know, we know what costs we're incurring. We know what costs we're going to be incurring for the fiscal year. That's why we make these goals, and that's why we need to reach them. So we really appreciate your doing so now. Go to kboo.fm, click on donate, or text KBOO to 44321. Mail us your check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Well, I haven't gotten any takers yet for the for engaging me in a conversation. So I wanted to talk a little bit more. You know, I've been looking at some articles about capitalism is a Ponzi scheme. I could read some from that too. But you know what a Ponzi scheme is? Basically, it's like some unscrupulous person. There's been a few famous cases in recent years. Basically, doesn't really have anything to return the investment to people that invest in this Ponzi scheme. They basically just keep getting more and more investors in, and then they can pay out to people who have invested as long as they keep getting new investors. But that just means the whole thing just has to keep going and going like that. But nobody's actually getting anything of substance out of it. And that's what financialized capitalism is. And that's, you know, that's what I think a lot of people don't understand about the fossil fuel industry, say, and many other industries. Once upon a time, I'll just read a little bit from Hanna Leventanova's article called Smash and Grab Economy. Private equity billionaires are looting the country, leaving everyday Americans to clean up the mess and fight for the scraps. She says, kind of about halfway into it, for a long time, corporations worked in the plain way that you'd imagine they should work. They created a product or provided a service. And if they did a good job of it, they turned a profit. Hoodville, for example, grew to be a valuable company. This is a company that was one of the early, or I don't know, I've been reading a bunch on private equity, I'm not sure. But anyway, it was a victim of a leveraged buyout. And they basically, it went bankrupt. Hooterville, for example, grew to be a valuable company by making first-rate car parts. Simple enough. But A confluence of factors in the 1970s flipped that model on its head. Suddenly, the value of a business was measured less by how well it served its customers and far more by the profits it reaped for its investors. University of Chicago economist Milton Friedman, boo, hiss, helped propel this change with a 1970 manifesto in the New York Times. Corporations, he wrote, need not worry about, quote, providing employment, eliminating discrimination, avoiding pollution, and whatever else, unquote. They were accountable to the wallets, excuse me, the sound of turning paper, their shareholders, nothing more, nothing less. There is one and only one social responsibility of business, to use its resources and engage in activities designed to increase its profit, Friedman added. Historians deemed the resulting shift the, quote, shareholder value revolution. As rising stock prices became paramount, which we've seen to this day, a raft of new ways to pump them up followed. First, the kinds of hostile takeovers that Saltarelli had feared. This is referring to the first part of this article. And later, the leveraged buyouts that KKR used his company to pioneer. Soon, businesses came to be viewed less as productive enterprises and more as bundles of assets to be bought, sold, and endlessly manipulated for financial gain. Rather than doing the hard work of investing in new value, innovative products, or fresh approaches to societal problems, financiers began focusing on extracting value again and again and again. This ideological shift soon collided with a human one. In August 1981, about 13,000 air traffic controllers, sorry, I forgot my reading glasses, went on strike to demand better pay and reduced hours. In violation of laws barring government workers from striking, they walked out of airports around the country, grounding much of American air travel. Within 2 days, President Ronald Reagan fired almost all of them rather than cede to their demands. Reagan's power play laid the groundwork for a decade of anti-labor activity that depressed union power at the exact moment when corporations were in the midst of their shareholders' first transformation. As Wall Street salivated over the enormous gains of the Hooterville leveraged buyout, this is the first leveraged buyout that kind of set the model for the 1970s and succeeding leverage buyout frenzy, which kicked capitalism into this whole financialization era that we're in ever more. As Wall Street salivated over the enormous gains of the Hooterville leverage buyout, the backlash against labor made it easier for the budding kings of private equity, KKR, Blackstone, and Carlyle, the first, to engineer buyouts that sacrificed employees for yet another mega bundle of management fees and carried interest. By 1989, such firms had put together more than 2,000 leveraged buyouts valued at more than $250 billion. It was a moment, a wild money-making one for Wall Street, and a sobering one for the broader public, who glimpsed this world through fictional private equity overlords like the greed-loving Gordon Gecko or Pretty Woman's Edward Lewis. Anyway, again, this is the first in a series of articles on private equity firms that just came out in the New Mother Jones, which really helps explain the nature of the modern capitalist system, which basically explains the way the world is going today. And I think I started to say the way I've come to understand it, it's people throw out consumerism, the greedy corporations, you know, all true. But one of the things that I don't think we do really understand is how the financialization has kicked this whole thing into another level. In that, again, if you like a Ponzi scheme, if you keep on, you know, the people who invest, say, you know, when I got involved briefly in Rising Tide in the in the early, about 2012, 13, and they were fighting against these megalodes, which are these huge pieces of equipment that are part of the steam extraction process of tar sands oil that were being shipped up the Columbia River and offloaded and then put onto these big, huge, oversized trucks, which only some specialized companies had, and then driven over these relatively small highways and needing this whole team of flaggers and escort vehicles and police escorts to put them through up Idaho and into Canada, where they did their dirty work. And the Alpha Omega Morgan, the trucking company, had recently been bought by a private equity firm. And I believed and I still believe that one of the reasons why tar sands, either there's this whole peak oil idea came out 15, 20 years ago and basically said that we were reaching the peak oil, the point at which oil was going to be no longer profitable to take out of the ground. Well, people found it became profitable partly because of these new technologies, like those megalode machines, these huge steam extraction machines, the new processes, new technologies is a big part of it. But also, because the whole fossil fuel economy was just so vastly, there's so much investment already in the fossil fuel industry that no one wanted to give it up. So the inertial weight was continuing the whole fossil fuel industry, and the with the financialization of capitalism, you had these new actors, these private equity firms and others, that were investing in the computer revolution, the dot-com bubble, the bundling of mortgages that led to the 2008 financial crash. There are always these big firms, the banks, the private equity firms, whoever is speculating in capital is always looking for the next big pool, pension funds, et cetera. They're always looking for big pools of capital to deploy to make more profit. And they're always looking for new schemes, new areas of investment. So one of them being the fossil fuel industry. So some of these buy up these whether they're pipeline companies, whether these trucking companies that service the fossil fuel industry. And so once they invest in them, they have to get that oil out of the ground in order to make a profit. That's what's driving the system now, is the speculation for profit. And so, regardless of what anybody wants, to keep the machine going, they have to keep squeezing everywhere that they're investing, including the fossil fuel industry, including the housing rental market, et cetera. And so we're all, paying for it by paying, now the oil companies are making these windfall profits because they can, because there's a war on, so then they can, and because there's, because nobody's, I think Elizabeth Warren was the only one trying to rein in the private equity firms. There's a whole article on her in this issue of Mother Jones. Anyway, I could go on and on, but I guess my point is the illusion that we can make incremental changes within the system as it is indeed an illusion. Now, the way we can combat it, I really don't know. It's a huge monster, but I think the first step is to actually understand how the monster works. So I'm just trying to give you a few hints, and I think, reading Chris Hedges, he's got a series of interviews with David Harvey, who's an economist, a Marxist economist, who's does some really good work. There's a whole podcast series that David Harvey and Chris Hedges did. It's worth checking out. This new Mother Jones on private equity firms. It's a lot to take in. We're all stressed out. We're all overburdened. Many of us don't have the educational tools to, maybe even get into this kind of thing. I don't know, but all I know is that if, unless we do, we're even more doomed than maybe we think. So I'm running out of time rapidly. I've never talked for 45 minutes straight on this program without a caller, and I hope that means that you're interested in what I'm saying, that there is some value in what I'm saying. Perhaps not. Perhaps you already turned off. I don't know. I hope not. But you do have 15 minutes left to engage with me, should you so desire it. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Now, if I hadn't given you enough bad news, you know, I talked about the way the military is the biggest single contributor in terms of globally to the climate crisis, towards the greenhouse gas emissions, just because the, you know, the vast amounts of fuel, all the ships, the tanks, the, you know, the production of all the equipment, all the training exercises, it's just it's vast, and it's got to stop. The only way we're gonna have any chance of surviving the climate destabilization that's going on is by confronting the global military. And we need to do it first, because we are the largest military in the world here in the United States of America. And if that's not part of the climate movement, the environmental movement, then we got not much chance. So rocket launches, there's a whole new kind of rocket that, it's space launches. Rocket launches could be polluting our atmosphere in new and unexpected way. I'm sorry, it's related to the military, but I had a different impression, but it's actually rocket exhaust could have a significant cumulative effect on the atmosphere, the climate, and human health. So all these people who think they're gonna make some sort of space colony in space to escape the coming apocalypse, they're actually contributing to the very apocalypse that they're trying to flee. Anyway, this is an article came out on Gizmodo. Rocket launches could be polluting our atmosphere in new and unexpected ways. Looks like we do have a phone caller. Bob, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm really interested in what you're talking about, and my viewpoint is that this whole system has got to go, and they're trying to make it go. You know, they're trying to implode the whole debt-based system. We've got this, all of this debt that we cannot pay back. You've talked about that. And they tried to use the pandemic to crash the system. They shut down all those small businesses.
Wait a second. What are you saying? They, who are they that used that? You mean it was a conscious decision to shut down, to destroy the really?
The one percenters, the political elite, the global elite, the corporate elite. This money, this debt based system is just gone overboard, and you know, you've heard the talk about the reset. And so I've been looking at this, and my viewpoint is there's only one way really out of it, and it's got to be through peace. We've got to stop the wars for oil. We were here with 20 years of war, Iraq and Afghanistan, so much over energy. The Ukrainian war has a huge energy aspect to it. And you just mentioned we're going out there with the military, with the wars, and we're just burning all the fossil fuels. You know, the lasting impression of that is when back in the day when Saddam Hussein, when the Americans are invading, he torches his oil fields. What are we doing? So the only way out is to get the warmongers out of Congress. We need peace. We have to, you know, we're on the brink of nuclear war now because America has the weapons, and we're just threatening everyone. If you don't do it our way, we're going to destroy you. Do you get that feeling that that's the way it's been for the last 20 years here?
Well, it's been that way for a lot longer. I mean, we're you know, the whole Cold War period, I mean, that was an enforced, that's what Chris Hedges was talking about, the so-called Pax Americana. It was actually a sort of a mutually assured destruction of Pax Americana. But yeah, I mean, our ability to threaten force was, you know, was what kept in check in our the nuclear powers having nuclear devices, and the threat to use them was what kept you know, big international conflagrations from happening. And now we've got a different time, and you know, and I agree with you. I totally agree with you. I think that just saying that obviously isn't enough. I guess my plea, I was just at the climate strike, the youth climate strike and climate march and climate festival, and I saw very little, almost nothing about militarism. I still see the major groups really not getting on that. And I think that if...
That's a big problem. That whole movement cannot function unless we have an end to the wars. You know, and, you know, you talk about Chris Hedges and Noam Chomsky. I mean, these are the people I've been following. And Chomsky is always going, you know...
Okay, Bob, I got to actually let you go because we have another couple callers and only about 9 minutes left. But thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Bob. All right. Yeah, peace. All right. Peace movement. Where is it? Anti-war movement. We need it. We need it now desperately. Dempsey, you're up next. Go ahead.
Did you say me?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Calling. I was with you at the very beginning, and I missed some of the in-between. And I'd like to say I agree with the last caller that we need to get the warmongers out of Congress. So in the beginning, you were talking a lot about the mass shootings and the gun control. And I put this in context, international context, because for me, I lived in Taiwan for 12 years. I lived in Ethiopia for 3 years. And you pick a country in the world, there's no country as violent as the United States. And walking around in Taiwan, I can feel safe. I know that the average person doesn't have a gun. There are very few guns in the country. And in Ethiopia, it's a big country. Most people are farmers. And again, the average person doesn't have a gun. Like any country, there's crime, but the criminals might have a knife, maybe. They don't have a gun. They might hit you in the head with a rock to try to rob you, or they're most likely going to pickpocket you. So it's a very different kind of feeling to walk the streets of countries where people are not going to shoot you down. And when your kids go to school, you don't have to worry about them dying. And when your grandma goes to the shopping market, you don't have to worry about her getting gunned down. So I think about things like that when I go to a mostly black church in Salem, Oregon. And as I'm in choir, so I'm on stage, and I have a view of the front door. And I think about, like, what if somebody comes in with a gun? Like, what's going to happen? Who's going to be there first? And one of the deacons, one day, he had a gun on his hip because we're going to some event at a different church. And I asked him about it. And I start thinking, do we have to run around armed?
That's what the NRA wants, and
I definitely don't want that. And I just thought, I also would. I used to work at Estacada High School, and back in 2017, the school district decided that all staff could have concealed weapons on them, and understandably, this is not a decision that came from teachers. The teachers are against this, and it's just a foolish, ridiculous reaction to school gun violence is to have everybody armed. And when you ask teenagers about it, some of them are for it. They say, yeah, all the teachers should have guns, and maybe they think they should have guns too.
That's the culture of violence that's just spiraled so far out of control that's led to this. It's mind-boggling that we even get to that point. I mean, it's mind-boggling that you who, you know, I don't know, 10, 20 years ago, I can't imagine you would have had that feeling of having to look towards the door to see if someone might be barging in with a gun. It's just, it's a horror show.
Well, it's partly because it's a black church. The United States has a history of white supremacists targeting, bombing, firebombing, entering and shooting, like Dylann Roof. Black churches get targeted. And so I think about the kids and the grandmas in my church who they're at risk of crazy people. And that's the problem with our countries. Any country has some unstable people, but we have too many guns everywhere and too easy access and increasingly easy access as states like Texas relax everything and say, anybody can have a gun, no training, no ID check, just have a gun.
Well, as our president said, one thing I do agree with him, you know, when are we going to get a backbone to actually confront the gun manufacturers and their enabler, the National Rifle Association, just like on the international scene, as I start, oh my God.
Someone's phone's going off.
Oh, that's embarrassing. That's me. I should do something about that. Anyway,
hey,
so live on the air here on KBOO Radio. Listen to Dempsey. I've got another couple callers I've got to get to. Thank you for calling. I really appreciate that. And of course, the NRA and the international arms manufacturers are the gun manufacturers and the international weapons manufacturers are all some of the same people and all in the same league. But we got to get to Barth. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. Appreciate your efforts today. I want to talk to the general public here. You know, folks, this is your outlet. This is your window into a bigger world that is not available anywhere else. You can't get people to talk about real things on most any media outlet. Certainly there are some specialty websites, and those run the gamut from, you know, informative to crazy, but you need to support your radio station. You need to tell your friends and your associates that this is useful for them, that this is heartening and informative in a way that is going to allow change in society to happen. No information, no change. No agitation, no change. Come on, put up some spare change. Make this work for you, for me, for everybody else. Support the people that are supporting you.
Well, bless you, Barth.
Thanks for your work, Paul.
Bless you. Thank you. On that note, Francis, I have to only give you like 30 seconds or a minute because I do have to talk more about our spring membership drive and we're almost out of time. But go ahead. Hi, Francis.
Hi. Well, you know, the recent shooting just indicates that the militarism is kind of taken over in our society. And I'm trying to figure out a way to get Congress to not be beholden to the corporate military industry. But there is an organization called World Beyond War. And it's founded, they want to abolish the institution of war itself, that it is not a viable option, that it is not good, that it is it's not a necessary evil. And there are quite a few people that are members of that organization. One that comes to mind right away is Dennis Kucinich and Madea Benjamin. There are several people involved. Just check it out.
Okay.
It's called World Beyond War.
Okay, well, thank you so much. World Beyond War. Thank you, Francis. And what I would say to that is we can't rely on, obviously, just one organization. We have to make that part of all the different struggles, just like, you know, people of color demand of, you know, white environmental groups to take their issues seriously, to incorporate them into their organizing and their hiring and their staffing, et cetera, and et cetera, et cetera. We have to address the militarist problem. We have to address financialized capitalism. Okay, so go to kboo.fm. This is one place to direct your finances where they will be put to good use, where you will get some substance from your investment. You will get some real community spirit, some real community building, some real information, some real sharing. So KBOO Community Radio has been around for over 50 years, and we have done it because we have gotten the support of our listeners. Go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button. You can text KBOO to 44321. That's 44321 on your mobile device. You can mail your check to KBOO Community Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Please do it now. Please support us. You've got till May 28th for our spring membership drive. Thank you, Ty, for manning the board. I got to get out of here. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye, everybody.
Oh, your master's lies, who kill all the truth, who spread all the hatred and poison the roots, who hide behind TVs, computers, and spies. I just want you to know that I see through your lies. Oh, you suck up all the money and you leave us with crumbs. They expect us to be grateful, but we're not that dumb.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. And on the web, we're at kboo.fm. The time is 9 a.m.